A few years ago, Kathy Hoffer spoke on disciplining the strong-willed child. I don't know if anyone was there for that, but I remember how good that was. And that very afternoon, I went to pick up my kids, and they were elementary age at the time. And one of my boys hauled off and smacked the other one right in the face, just punched him right in the face. And I was absolutely mortified because my kids were, I mean, they're boys, they're active, but they weren't hitters. But this was a direct punch to the jaw. And, you know, all these parents on the playground, and they're looking at me, what's she going to do? What's she going to do? You know, I'm like, where is that super nanny when you need her? And I, you know, my immediate reaction was just to, you know, lay into him, is, you know, give him the full name and, you know, just starts, just, what are you doing? And I, her, Kathy's words came back to my head that if you can't speak to them in love and with your anger under control, it's better to not say anything at all. So I'm like, got myself together, ordered everyone into the car, and it was a very quiet ride home, all the way home. And I remember I went, put the boy that had done the hitting in his room. I went to my room to calm down and then decide what how I was going to handle it. But I just thought how awesome it was to have that tool in my head right there to start to deal with it. And so today we're going to talk about parenting with love and logic, and I hope it's going to be able to give you all some tools to have in the moment to know what to do, because it is hard to know what to do with all these different situations that come up in parenting, isn't it? So Jill Cleary is here to talk about that, and she is a teacher at Harambe Christian Schools and Inner City Schools that Xenos sponsors. She's been a teacher for 14 years, and she's also been a home church leader for 28 years, and she's also raised two girls that are 19 and 21, so she's got a lot of experience with kids, and she was telling me that it really does, she has seen this approach really help in her classroom. So thank you for coming. Come on up.
Am I on? Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much for having me. Like Kim said, I've been at Harambe for 14 years. About 3 years, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we started using this new program called Teaching with Love and Logic. It has completely changed how I teach. It's changed how I interact with my students. It's changed the dynamics of my classroom. And it's made teaching much more pleasant and enjoyable for me, and I think a lot more enjoyable for the students as well. I used to have this clip system. I had a rope with a blue zone, green, yellow, orange, red, and they all had a clip, and they start in the blue zone. Blue is good, red is bad. And all that did was, you know, the kids who were always in the blue zone were really self-righteous. And the kids who wound up in the orange and red zone all the time were angry. And the whole class was focused on where they were in the zones. And they were more concerned about that than about the issue that we were trying to deal with. And it was not good. So I threw the clips away, threw the rope away, along with this new program. I'm not here to talk about teaching with love and logic, but parenting with love and logic, but the same principles apply. And I want to start with what love and logic isn't. So let's see. Did I go the wrong way? Ah, okay. Ah, good. Love and logic isn't being a helicopter parent. I'll talk about that. Or being a drill sergeant parent. We'll talk first about helicopter parenting. Helicopter parents revolve their lives around their children. Their children are the center of their universe. They spend their day running them here and there and just signing them up for everything, and they're the center of their world, okay? They hover and rescue when their kids are in trouble. They're always pulling their kids out of jams. A helicopter parent is the parent that's constantly running homework into school because they forgot to take it, running in permission slips, gym shoes, lunches that they left sitting on the table. You know, and they're constantly pulling their kids out of these jams. They're all about protecting and shielding their kids from pain and hurt. And yes, as a parent, our job is to protect from major pain and hurt. We're not going to let our kids go play in a busy street. We're not going to let them just run havocly in the neighborhood or play it in the yard of some sex offender or something. You know, we need to protect our kids. And, you know, that's important. But these parents will try to protect even from minor pain and hurt. Well, he'll be hungry if he doesn't have his lunch. I gotta take his lunch in. He forgot it again. He'll be hungry. Can't let him go hungry. Yes, we can let him go hungry. He's gonna learn. He's gonna learn then to remember his lunch. Well, I can't let him not go on the field trip. He's going to feel left out. He's going to feel disappointed. He left the permission slip laying here. Yeah, he probably will feel disappointed and left out. I bet he'll learn from that. You know, we want to kind of protect them from those sorts of things. We want to fight their battles for them. You know, we're jumping in there and, you know, solving their conflicts for them and getting involved and dealing with this kid. And we're sometimes fighting battles that we shouldn't even be fighting. Sometimes we're fighting against the school system that's trying to help our kids. You know, we have a parent in our school that just pulled her child out. This child is a pretty angry and kind of mean-hearted girl and likes to cause problems. She likes to gossip. She likes to stir up trouble, gets kids upset. And then she goes home and plays the victim to her mom. And her mom comes in and is raising all kinds of heck and just believes that this kid is this victim and just pulls her out of the school. She's crippling her child. We cripple our children when we do this. There's a mom bubble wrapping her kid. There's a mom hovering, wants to make sure her kid gets the right answer. Here's a mom that's hired a lifeguard to watch her kids in the bathtub. And the father comes in and says, "Don't you think you're being a bit overprotective?" Yeah. I'm one of those helicopter parents. I can still be that way, and my kids don't even live in the home anymore. Always wanting to protect. When we hover, we rob our kids of growing experiences that they need and that they deserve. We rob them of that opportunity. Okay. Next is drill sergeant parenting. Drill sergeant parents control their children. They bark out orders. They constantly tell them what to do. They constantly discipline when they don't respond. They use a lot of put-downs. They use a lot of I told you so's. They use a lot of what's the matter with you? And have you learned your lesson yet? How many times do I have to tell you? Blah, 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 blah. And these parents rule their home with power. And these kids end up getting robbed of the chance to think for themselves. They're not getting the chance to think for themselves. And these are the kids that I think are going to become more vulnerable to peer pressure. Why? Anybody have an idea why they might become more vulnerable to peer pressure? Yes, they're always being told what to do. They've not learned to think for themselves. And so when they are in their teen years, and they start becoming a little bit more independent of their parents, who are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to their peers. They're used to being told what to do. And we better hope, in that case, that they've got a great group of peers. So what love and logic is? I want to read a quote from the book. It says, "Through the miracle of birth, we're given a tiny, defenseless babe, totally dependent on us for every physical need. We have a mere 18 years at most to ready that suckling for a world that can be cruel and heartless. The child's success in the real world hinges in large part on the job we do as parents. Just thinking about raising responsible, well-rounded kids sends a sobering shiver of responsibility right up the old parental spine. Many of us have felt queasy after a thought such as this. If I can't handle a 5-year-old in the grocery store, what am I going to do with a 15-year-old who seems to have an enormous understanding of sex and is counting the days until he can get his driver's license? All is not so bleak. Trust us, there's hope, shining beacon bright, at the end of the tunnel of parental frustration. Parenting doesn't have to be drudgery. Children can grow to be thinking, responsible adults, and we can help them do it without living through an 18-year horror movie. Parenting with love and logic is all about raising responsible kids. It's a win-win philosophy. Parents win because they love in a healthy way and establish control over their kids without resorting to anger, to the anger and threats that encourage rebellious teenage behavior. And kids win because they learn responsibility and the logic of life by solving their own problems. And I can't read that last line. Okay, by solving their own problems. So, love and logic puts you, the parent, just to summarize, in control without being controlling. It helps your kids think for themselves. It raises their responsibility. And it prepares your kids to function effectively in a world that's filled with temptations and with decisions and with consequences. Now, with all that said, I just want to make a qualification. This whole approach is not like the silver bullet. I'm not trying to say this is the answer, and it's the answer to perfect parenting. We're never going to have perfect parenting. We're never going to be perfect parents. But I have found it to be a great tool. I really believe that this is a tool that can help us raise responsible kids who can think for themselves and function effectively in a pretty scary world. And so, how does it work? Love and logic parents use more of a consulting style of parenting as early as possible in the child's life. And what I mean by a consulting style is they ask their kids a lot of questions and they offer a lot of choices. And instead of telling them what to do, they put the burden of decision-making on their kids' shoulders. And so when I'm out at recess duty, and you know I'm out on the playground, and a kid comes up to me and says, "Devon is being mean, he won't let me play." Well, I'm going to say back to him, "What do you think you can do about that?" You know, rather than, what I would have done in the past was, okay, take me to Dave. Where's Devon? Go get him. And, you know, Devon, what's going on? You know, I'm getting involved and trying to work it out for him. I'm going to say, no, what do you think you can do about that? Now, I've already trained these 5-year-old kids, on how to work out conflict. And one great book for that is The Young Peacemaker. It's really good. And so I've kind of trained them on that. And so he's going to say, well, I could go play with someone else. Yeah, that's a good option. What else? What else do you think you could do? Well, I could tell him how that makes me feel. Ah, yeah, that's good. So what would you like to go do? Sometimes they'll say, I'm going to go play with someone else. Off they go. Sometimes they say, I'll go tell him how I feel. Good choice. Go for it. And they'll go over there and let the kid know how he feels, and they'll work out this conflict. Sometimes their words don't work or the other kid won't listen. Well, then I'll get involved, and I'll go over and I'll just say, you know, Devon, would you please listen to David? And then I go ahead and tell him, David, and let them work it out. I'm going to stay out of it as much as possible. And so we want to ask questions, offer choices, not be telling them what to do, but putting the burden of decision-making on our kids, and we're going to establish options within limits, and I'll talk about that. By the time they become teens, then, they're used to making good decisions. Now, there's a lot to love and logic. I have 1 hour to talk. There's the book, Parenting with Love and Logic. There's Teaching with Love and Logic. Part of the slide is not showing, but there's a website, www.loveandlogic.com. You can order all kinds of information there. You can get DVDs. The Teaching with Love and Logic DVDs are phenomenal, and the principles apply. This book is great. This is very good, too. I recommend them both for you. But what I want to do this morning is just focus on three areas that have really helped me in my classroom, and that's the area of choices, of consequences, and delivering consequences with empathy. And then the third one is enforceable statements, which I like to call I statements. So we'll talk first about choices. Now, God gave us quite a bit of freedom, didn't he? We have considerable freedom as human beings, and that freedom includes the opportunity to screw up. The first screw up began with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Now, did God approve of that screw up? No. He did not approve of their disobedience, but he loved them and he valued them enough to let them make a decision and then live with the consequences of that decision. And God's love in the garden there really sets an example for all parents to follow. You know, just as God gives us the ability to make choices, we need to give our children the ability to make choices. And this means we need to allow for failures, and we need to even hope for failures. Hope for failures, because they're going to learn through those failures. And when they fail, we're not going to wag our finger, I told you. We're going to be there in a gracious way to help them make the most of those failures, okay? So, would a love and logic parent say, it's cold, get your winter coat on and button it up? Or would a love and logic parent say, it's cold, you might want to choose a coat? They're going to do the second option. And that kid may choose a winter coat. Yay, he chose a winter coat. He might choose a light jacket. He might choose no coat at all. Step outside and freeze his butt off. I bet he'll learn. He might get as far as the front porch and say, I changed my mind. I think I want my coat. It's great. Go get it. Let him get his coat. He's learning. By letting your kid choose, you're saying to your child, I know that you're smart enough to figure this out. I don't need to figure all this out for you. You're smart enough to make this decision. Let's say you have an upper elementary age kid who won't get out of bed in the morning to get to school on time, and they're making you late for work. A love and logic parent wouldn't be screaming and yelling them out of bed. And I have to tell you, that's what I did for years, all the way through high school. I didn't do this. I didn't know this stuff. I was screaming, yelling, repeatedly going back into my girls' rooms, trying to get them up. Even with their alarm clock, they'd sleep through it. Get up! Go back. Come on, get up! Pretty soon I'm screaming. My blood pressure is rising. I'm yelling at them the whole way to school, and I drop them off in an alienated state. And this went on and on and on. It would have been much better if in about third or fourth grade, maybe, I would have gotten them an alarm clock, taught them how to use it, sat them down and said, you know, girls, breakfast is going to be served at 8. And my car is going to be leaving at 8:20. So what time do you think you should set your alarm clock to get up? Because mommy's not going to get you up anymore. You're going to need to set your alarm clock and wake up. And, you know, then you plan in advance, call your mom or your sister or a neighbor or someone who's home who can be on call. And the next time your kid oversleeps and refuses to get up or whatever it is, you go in and you say, honey, it's 8:20. My car's leaving now. I've gotten a sitter. Sitter is on her way. You can decide how you want to pay for that sitter. You can either do chores to work it off, or you can sell some of your stuff. Think about that. Have a great day. I love you. I'll see you when I get home from work. And you leave. You leave. And you leave them there. You do not write a note excusing them the next day. If the sitter comes and they decide, I want to go to school, great. They're still going to need to pay that sitter for their time and their gas. They can figure out how they want to do that. And there's no note excusing them. I bet you they'll learn. I wish I would have done that. I went through hell for years with these girls, and it was a drag. It was finally Kristen's senior year. I finally got a clue. And she now had a car, and she could drive herself there. And I was still going down and saying, honey, wake up. And I finally said, Kristen, I'm not going to come down and wake you anymore. You're a big girl. Get yourself to school. And that was the end of that. And oh, my God, she got herself up. And she made it to school. And she could have been doing that much younger. And I really think I messed up there. Let's say you have a young kid who won't get dressed in the morning. They're a little one. Say to them, you know, sweetie, you can go to school with your clothes on, or you can wear your pajamas and go to school with your clothes in this bag right here. What do you choose? What would you like to do? And let them know you can go to the car with your feet in the air or your feet on the ground, meaning I'll carry you to the car, or you can walk with your own 2 feet. Which would you like to do? And I bet you if you end up having to carry them to the car with their pajamas on, their clothes in a bag, I bet you they'll learn. And, you know, you want to do it calmly. It's, you know, some of the problem we have is we make their problem our problem. And we start getting angry, and we need to, you know, when they try to put their problem on us, we need to give it back to them. It's their problem. It's their problem. And we can remain calm. Little kids can make a lot of mistakes at affordable prices. They can pick themselves up again if things don't work out. All they're out is some temporary pain, some tears, maybe some toys that they've sold. But the older a kid gets, the bigger the decisions and the graver the consequences. All right. When giving choice, give two options, each of which you can live with. Don't give an option that isn't okay with you. Make sure it's options you can live with. If your child doesn't decide in 10 seconds, I mean 10 slow seconds, you know, give a little bit of time here. And if they can't seem to make a decision, decide for them. I do that at school a lot. I'll wait. Give them a chance to decide, and then I'll decide, and then all of a sudden they'll decide, and I let them do that. Give many opportunities for your children to make simple choices. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of opportunities to make simple choices. So, you want to wear your jacket or carry it? Do you want to brush your teeth or put your pajamas on first? Do you want to wear your red or your blue shirt? You want your hair in a ponytail or a braid today? Would you like peas or carrots tonight for dinner? Do you want to watch Dora or SpongeBob? Are you going to bed now, or would you like to wait 15 minutes? Would you like to walk up to bed tonight, or would you rather have a piggyback ride? Will you be getting your chores done tomorrow, or do you need an extra day? Are you going to clean the garage or mow the lawn this week? Will you be home by 10 or do you need an extra 15 minutes with your friends? Giving lots of choices empowers your kids, and they feel like they have a little bit of control over their lives, and it really does eliminate a lot of the fight between you and them. And so try to think of ways that you can give them choice. Okay, I want to talk about consequences. Sometimes you'll choose the consequence. Often you can let them choose the consequence. How many options? Two. You give them two options that you can live with. And so at school, I'll say, you know, do you think you need to miss 5 or 10 minutes of recess to think about, you know, how you treated so-and-so or whatever? Do you want to sit out first or second recess to make your apology card? What's going to help you, honey? Missing recess since you're having a lot of trouble getting along with others, or would it help you more to call your mom? I'm going to wait. Let them make a decision. Sometimes I want to give you an example of upping the consequence choices. So we'll give you a worst-case scenario. Let's say I have a kid in my class who's choosing to disrupt while I'm trying to teach. And I'll say to them, I'll kind of lean in and say, you know, I'd appreciate it, honey, if you'd sit quietly while I'm trying to teach. She decides to keep yakking and messing with the kids around her. Oh, man, this is a bummer that you're choosing to disrupt. What's going to help you, honey? Sitting in the back of the room, or will it help you to go across the hall to Mr. Flaherty's room? She makes a choice, sitting in the back of the room. Okay, go ahead. Come back when you feel you're ready. Am I going to make her stay there for, you have to stay there for 10 minutes. No, I want her to self-correct. You come back when you feel you're ready. So she goes and sits, and she comes back, and usually it's better. But let's take the worst case scenario. She comes back and she keeps acting up. Oh, what a bummer. Sitting in the back of the room really didn't help you. So what's going to help you, honey? Going across the hall to Mr. Flaherty's room or sitting down in the office? I wait. Sitting in Mr. Flaherty's room. Why don't you go on over there? Come back when you feel you're ready. She comes on back when she feels she's ready, but she starts it up again, and then I tell her, you know, obviously you're having a hard time here. Why don't you go on down to the office, and I'll come down, and we'll talk when this lesson's over, or, you know, if it's right before lunch, we'll talk right before lunch. Do you want to walk down with Miss Stacy, or would you prefer I call Mr. Steinman to come and get you? See how I'm upping these consequences, and I'm giving her this choice, and so she says, Miss Stacy. So she goes down with Miss Stacy, and she's my aide. So Miss Stacy comes back. We go on with the morning. A little bit later, I go down, and I talk with her, and we discuss, why are you here? What did you do wrong? What could you have done differently? We talk this out, and then I say to her, you know, you missed a lot of work. You missed our skills practice pages that we were doing. You missed a phonogram test. You missed this over here. Do you want to make up your missed work during first or second recess? I wait, and I let her decide. And when she comes down, I'm not this mean person just wagging my finger at her. I'm like, okay, honey, let's go ahead and do this. She's learning. She's learning. And all the other students are learning, too, when they're watching all this. You can do this at home. You know, if you have a son that's pestering his sister, you know, you can say to your son, you know, you can stay here with us as long as you stop pestering your sister. And let's take the worst case scenario. He keeps doing it. Oh, dude, you know, I feel bad for you to keep choosing to do this. What's going to help you? Sitting over here in this chair, or maybe sitting over on the stairs, or, you know, somewhere away from us. He picks the stairs. Great. Go sit there and get it together. Come back when you feel you're ready. He comes back, and let's take worst case scenario, he keeps pestering. Oh, what a bummer, man. You obviously, this didn't help you. And maybe you need a little bit further distance. You want to go to your room, or maybe you can go downstairs, hang out there for a while, come back when you feel you're ready. He picks downstairs. Great. He comes back. He keeps it up. Dude, man, this is a bummer, and I am exhausted. I am really worn out. Why don't you go on up to your room while your sister and I watch this movie in peace? I'll come talk to you when it's over. You can hang out up there. Oh, do you want me to walk you there, or do you think you can handle getting there on your own? And, oh, he couldn't get there on his own. Great. Feel free to leave the door open or shut, you know, whichever you want, and we'll talk later. You might say to an older kid, man, I'm drained by all this. You know, I was going to clean the car today, and I was going to clean 3 bathrooms, but I'm really tired. So which would you like to do? Do you want to clean the car, or would you rather do the 3 bathrooms? He picks the car. Great, okay. You want to start on the inside of the car or the outside of the car? You see all the choice? And then you let him go ahead and do that. And he's learning. He's learning. Sometimes, in the moment, we can't think of a consequence, or we don't have time to carry out a consequence, or we're angry, or they're angry, and it's not a good time to carry out the consequence. We do not have to carry out the consequence in the moment. And so your kid defies or disobeys you, and you're like, wow, you know, I'm sad for you that you made that decision. I'm not real sure what to do about it right now, but I'll think about it and I'll get back to you. Try not to worry. And those words, try not to worry, are often a consequence in and of themselves. Try not to worry. I just did this yesterday with a little girl. Little Jemiah decided to steal Michael J's honey bun and shove it in her pocket. And I'm really glad it was still in the wrapper. And then she lied about it. And so she had this honey bun in her pocket, and Michael J's upset because he can't get the honey bun, you know, can't find his honey bun. And other kids said, Jemiah has the honey bun. I'm like, Jemiah, do you have Michael J's honey bun? And she goes, no. And you can see it, like, bulged out. I said, come here, dear. May I have the honey bun, please? And she pulls it out of her pocket. It's kind of mangled. And I give it back to Michael J, and she starts to cry. And I said, you know, I'm so sad for you that you chose to steal and lie. We'll talk about this later. Try not to worry about it. And then we go back to our classroom, and I always, it's right after recess and lunch, so I have them put their heads down. We have about 5 minutes just to settle down, quiet time. So she's there, and they're all, and she's kind of crying, and I call her up to my desk because I thought through what I wanted to do, and I called her up, and I asked, we talked it through. Why is this wrong? What could, you know, you have done differently, and blah, 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 and we talked that through. Well, what do you think you can do about this? And she said, well, I should apologize to Michael J. That'd be a good thing. Yeah, it'd be good to apologize to him. I said, but you know, stealing and lying is really serious. And I think that your mom should know about this. So on next recess, do you want to call your mom, or would you rather write her a note about what you did? She thought about it. She's like, I'll write a note. And so, you know, I wrote the words. She's in kindergarten, but I read it to her. She knew it. She can read some words. And she went ahead and wrote that note and drew a little picture of herself at the bottom, and it was adorable. And she apologized to Michael J, and it was great. It worked out wonderful. And she learned. She learned from that. Had I said, what are you doing? Stealing, lying, go to the office. You know, I don't think it would have had the effect that I would have wanted it to have. All right. What's my next point? Ah, yes. Always use empathy. Always use empathy when you're delivering consequences. I don't know if you've heard me saying some of those empathetic lines. I'm really sad for you that you made that decision. Oh man, that's a bummer. What do you think's gonna help you? What a bummer. You know, we'll come up with a consequence right before lunch. I really want you to try not to worry. You know, you want to express this empathy. There are benefits to delivering consequences with empathy. One is that your child is not distracted by your anger. It helps your child own their own pain and not blame. And so when Jemiah was hurting inside because, you know, of what she had done, if I had just gotten angry, she could have just shifted all that hurt onto anger against me. I don't want that. I want her to feel that pain for what she did. I don't want it shifted onto me. Your relationship with your child is maintained. You're seen as being able to handle problems without breaking a sweat. And your child learns through your example to use empathy with other people. So you're modeling empathy for your kid. The third one is using enforceable statements, okay? And again, I said these are called I statements. These focus on what you, the parent, are going to do, because who can you ultimately control? Yourself. Thank you. You can ultimately control you. You can control what you do. We try to control our kids, and maybe we're pretty good controllers. I was a pretty good controller, and I did not realize what a controller I was until my kids got older and I couldn't control them anymore. And I had no clue what a controller I was. And it, God has been really working in my heart there and teaching me to trust in Him and His sovereignty in my kids' lives because, oh my God, I want to, even at 19 and 21, I want to get in there and control. I want to control. And I can't. I cannot control them. And the older they get, the more you try to control, I'm telling you, you will push them away. You will hurt your relationship with your children when you are trying to control them and make them do what you want them to do. So, oh, I can't read that. Can you guys see that? I got to turn around. These are reasonable statements on the left. Please sit down. We're going to eat now. Please be quiet. I can't listen to your brother when you and you are both talking at the same time. Clean your room so we can go shopping. Don't talk while I'm reading to you. You can't play until you've finished your homework. That sounds reasonable, but it's all, you know, on them. The I statements, the enforceable statements, we'll eat as soon as you're seated. I'll be glad to listen to you as soon as your brother has finished talking to me. See that? I'll be glad. You're telling what you'll do. I'll be happy to listen to you when your brother's done talking to me. I'll be happy to take you shopping as soon as your room is clean. I'll start reading to you again as soon as you've finished talking. Don't shout at me. Pay attention. Don't be bothering your sister. Do your chores on time or you'll be grounded. Don't talk to me in that tone of voice. I listen to people who don't yell at me. I'll start again as soon as I know you're with me. You're welcome to stay with us as long as you're not bothering your sister. I'll be happy to let you go with your friends as soon as your chores are finished. I'll listen as soon as your voice is as calm as mine. You show some respect. Don't be late coming home from school. I'm not picking up your dirty clothes. Keep your room clean. I'll be glad to discuss this when respect is shown. I drive those to practice who arrive home on time. I'll be glad to wash the clothes that are put in the laundry room. All owners of clean rooms are welcome to join us for ice cream. Okay? You can control what you do. I use this a lot in my classroom. I call on kids who raise a quiet hand. You know, I don't respond to kids who shout out my name. And I'm kind of a broken record there. I had a little girl the other day that we were doing these wind books, and she couldn't make a kite. And she got up, and she comes running over to me. This girl has some struggles, behavioral struggles, and she's like a two-year-old. I can't do it! And she's screaming, and I said, Zasiah, I help kids who sit down and raise their hands quietly. She keeps screaming it. I help kids who sit down and raise their hand quietly. I said that about three times. She finally went and sat down but kept screaming. Desai, I help kids who raise their hands quietly. And the principal, your husband was in the room observing my teaching at the time. And thank goodness he was there, because I would have eventually had to maybe call him. But he took her out and he said to her, honey, how do you get help? How do you get help?
By sitting down and raising my hand quietly.
Yeah. Well, when you think you're ready to do that, you're welcome to go back into the classroom. A few minutes later, she came back in. She came over to me, and she was nice. She said, Miss Cleary, will you help me? And I said, Desiah, I help kids who sit down and raise their hand quietly. And she went and sat down, raised her hand quietly. Oh, Desiah, I am happy to help you. How can I help you? And a similar incident occurred a couple days later, just this week. And she came running up, screaming at me, hey, help me. And I said, Desiah, I help kids who sit down and raise their hand quietly. And by God, she turned around. She goes, And she went and sat down, raised her hand quietly. She's getting it. And so I went over there and said, I'm happy to help you. And I helped her out. So that was a victory. Results of enforceable statements. You know, when we set love and logic limits by saying what we will do or what we will allow, we avoid tensions, battles, and entangled messes that we get into when we can't get our kids to do what we want. We share some control with our children, and then they're less likely to resist in order to regain control. And we avoid getting sucked into trying to control something that we really can't control. And so, just in conclusion, where do we start? You know, because I just highlighted three areas, and you know, there's a lot here. Try to give some simple choices with your kids. Just start thinking of some simple choices that you can be giving them. Okay? And then when it comes to consequences, come up with an empathetic line that is comfortable for you and start becoming a broken record with that empathetic, and don't be sarcastic, but yeah, I'm sad for you. This makes me sad for you. Or what a bummer. You know, you want to be genuine. And choose a few I statements that you can begin using. And just begin with those. And then start practicing it. And, you know, I've kind of viewed this as kind of like learning grace. Grace does not come natural for us. Law comes natural. We have to learn grace. We have to consciously choose to live in grace and to put other people under grace and to walk with God in grace. And in the same way, this love and logic stuff, it does not come natural. Being a drill sergeant parent and being a helicopter parent, that's what comes natural. It's what comes natural for me. Barking out orders and hovering, protecting, that's what comes natural for me. And I struggle with this every day. I still blow it all the time at school. I know something will come out of my mouth and I'm like, oh, I wish I could take it back. Because I know I didn't do right. It's like learning another language. But we've got to kind of start practicing it and consciously choosing it, and gradually we begin to learn it. And it does start to bear fruit. You know, I'm dealing with 16 inner city kids, and it works. It really is working with these students. And I'm not even the parent, you know, I'm the teacher that gets them so many hours during the day, and it is making a difference. It's helping. So I don't know if anybody has questions.
So what do you do if you give them the two options and then they say, no, I want to do three.
Number three. You're just a broken record.
Just keep bringing those two options
back up. Yeah, because Jemiah did that when I gave the two options. She just initially kept going back to, well, I want to apologize to Michael J. That's really great that you want to do that. But your mom needs to know this. So this or this, and you just keep, these are your two options. You can decide, sweetie, or I'll decide for you.
Do you think spanking is ever appropriate?
Spanking?
At that point, yeah.
Oh.
For, like, younger kids, obviously.
We only spanked our kids a couple times each. That was very rare that we spanked our kids, but overall, we had fairly compliant kids. Yeah. I know spanking is a touchy issue. Love and logic would say no spanking.
Really?
But we did a couple times. When we reserved it for rare.
Like running into the street, like you have the option of stopping or, like what? It seems like there's certain like emergency situations that you need to, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right, right. Once when Kathleen was like 18 months old, we were like really stupid. We were kept trying to put her in a timeout, and we're like, she keeps getting out. She didn't understand what was going on. She was too little for it. And I remember we talked to a counselor, and she said, smack her hand one time. Make it hurt, she'll never do it again. And oh my God, it was one issue that she kept doing it over and over and over again. I don't remember what it was anymore. Smacked her hand one time, we didn't have the fight with this child anymore. Didn't happen again. And it kind of saved, ultimately, she doesn't remember getting her hand smacked, and it saved our relationship. So. But love and logic will say no spanking. Yeah.
I just wanted to share that there is also the love and logic birth to 6 years, which I know a lot of us have young, that room's full back there. And that really helped me out a lot, was the birth to 6 years. It's love and logic magic, I think is the name of it. Secondly, I just wanted to say that when you let your kids make choices and they make the wrong choice, like they choose not to wear their coat and it's really cold outside, be prepared that other parents and other people are going to judge you and say stuff to you like, why doesn't your kid have a coat on? Mm-hmm. And you need to explain to them in front of your child, well, I gave her the choice that she could wear her coat or she could not wear her coat, and she chose not to wear her coat. And it's just something that I ran into recently, and I was shocked at how many parents kind of got up in my business and was like, why doesn't your kid have a coat on?
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of those things you have to thicken your skin up a little bit and be able to be prepared to say, she made a choice this morning.
Okay, good point.
I have more of a comment, I guess, but I realize that for my two older girls, they're very different. And one I'm definitely more of a drill sergeant with, and the other I'm more of a helicopter mom. Mm-hmm. But I think I really appreciate this love and logic notion, in that I think it would help me be a more consistent parent with both of them in a more, like maybe in their reflections, like if I pursued them this way, that they would be able to say mom treated us more the same versus me being this way or that way with them because of their differences. So yeah. I think it's a good challenge to, even now I have a little guy coming up to try to interact with them all in a more loving, logical way.
Great, that's great.
Hi. Thank you for that. That was really helpful. I'm an educator and felt very convicted by all the things you were saying about how you treat your students. But I also have an 18-month-old, and I think, like myself, he really struggles with wanting to be in control, and I sense that he wants to be the authority. You know, already several times this morning, he's on the ground kicking, screaming because he can't eat candy, he can't have a popsicle, and he can't go outside. So mm-hmm. I'm having a little bit of a hard time aligning this idea with other teachings that I've heard here about the idea of, like, the child needs to have no control when they're really young, and then by the time they're 18, you've given them enough choices to where you're still the authority. Do you know what I'm talking about? That idea, like, you're the authority, but they're, like, making choices and, like,
you're gradually backing off, letting them rip out more.
So I mm-hmm. guess, like, what's a reasonable, with that idea in mind, like, how much control should they have, and even how maybe people know how to deal with, like, a temper tantrum? Like, how do you give a choice then to someone who, I just sit him in a chair and he sits there until he stops crying, mm-hmm. and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't really know that's working, but yeah.
Yeah, he's gonna throw this fit. You know, when you can go over here, mommy needs some peace. When you've got it together, you can come back. You know, I don't, you know, this would not say set him there and make him sit for a certain amount of time, but when you're, they use the word sweet. When you're sweet, come on back over. Choice for an 18-month-old, you know, do you want plain Cheerios or honey nut in your little container? I mean, you know, you can figure out ways, you know, do you want to bring this toy or this toy with you? You know, you can find very simple little choices that he can make that's going to help him feel he has a little bit of control, you know? Does that?
Yeah, I don't, like, can you talk about the idea of you're the ultimate authority, but they have control, like?
Yeah, I'm the ultimate authority because I'm deciding.
So you're making the choices.
I'm giving him the options. I'm deciding what the options are that are livable, that I can live with. I'm not just letting him, you know, oh, you want to go outside? Go. You know, I'm giving him options that I can live with. I'm in control, but I'm not being controlling. I'm letting him have a choice. Does that?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, like, I was kind of having those same thoughts that Chelsea was as you were talking. Like, how does this go along with all this other, like, literature and teachings and stuff on, like, disciplining your kids and, like, creating a thirst in them and all this stuff? But I really thought that point you made about, like, learning how to do this is kind of like learning about grace, and that, you know, it's not gonna, like, come immediately. And just even, like, reading, like, Dobson's Dare to Discipline, which is probably, like, the opposite of this book, You know, he does make these points that, like, all of this needs to be done with empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's really easy for people to gloss over that and be like, okay, I have to be this, like, you know, and he talks about as soon as you discipline your child, like, and like, having a love encounter with them and expressing your care, you know, and it's like, no one has written the book on how to raise a kid.
Right.
I mean, it would be great, but it's, I you know, I, again, I have, like, I'm not an expert. I have, again, like, a 16-month-old child. I don't even know what I have ahead of me, but, like, hearing this, it's like, yeah, like, just, like, Dobson makes these points, like, this is how we are supposed to, like, mimic God to our children and follow his example, and that's exactly what, like, you've laid out here that I think is really good, that this is something that God does with us, and how we apply this in parenting, it's just going to take the Holy Spirit showing us how to do that.
Right.
And having God teach us, just like he has about grace, like, how do I impart that to my kids? So I just thought that last point was really good, that this is going to be a there's a learning curve for us as well.
Absolutely. Good. Thanks.
I was just thinking, I guess, how do we avoid, like, I mean, I'm just... I think I have three kids. I can't possibly give them all choices on everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I don't, sometimes I feel like I've set it up that they expect choices. So when I say this is what we're doing, I get, like, flack from, you know, like last week I said, we're going to go for ice cream when daddy gets home. And instead of yay, I got, well, aren't we going to go here? And, you know, it's like, can't we just have fun? And, like, I don't know. I think, how do we avoid, like, I think there are times they don't have choices, or whether it's not with us or their teachers, just in life. Like, you don't right. always get a choice.
Right.
And so I don't want them to, like, I want them to respect, I guess, when, and maybe that's what the last couple comments, I felt like we're kind of leading toward that, but, like, sometimes we're just doing this, and or we're just going here, and I just don't want them to have it set up that they always have. I guess, how do you avoid that?
Like, well, in a situation like that, I'd probably use an I statement. So they're ungrateful about going for ice cream. I'm like, oh, you know, I take grateful kids for ice cream. You know, maybe another time. Sorry. And this, we don't go.
One of the statements they have in that is they say, you know, if you get in this habit of giving your choices all the time, then you can say, Mommy gives you lots of choices. Now we're going to do this, you know, or don't you get lots of choices? And my kids, this is work. I mean, you have to take, it does take thinking it through because it's not just the knee-jerk reaction, you know, mm-hmm. but I mean, they're like, yeah, you know, I mean, it's, I've seen the fruit of this, of doing this. And like you're saying, I fall out of it. I'll mm-hmm. go back to my old way of kind of parenting under the, I mean, even this morning, just the dictatorship parenting, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes that works, but like you're saying, as they get older, it just doesn't work as much anymore, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, but I like that. The other thing they have that I thought was so great is they talk about the brainstem. Mm-hmm. When your kids are like out of control, angry, they're all thinking in brainstem. There's like no frontal lobe thinking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're trying to like be rational, it's just not the place for it. And so you just realize, like you were saying, like, you know, we'll say, like, it just sounds like you need a break. Why don't yeah. you go take a break and come back down when you want to talk? And boy, it makes such a difference.
It does.
You cannot reason with a child who is all emotion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when they've had that time, and we've had so many great interactions at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, great.
Over here. Going on that point. I remember a very specific time, and it's happened many times, but we as a family were going for a bike ride. And when my daughter was little, she would cry the whole bike ride. I don't like biking. I don't want to do this. And we were like, well, what are we going to do? We're like 2 miles away from the house. I mean, we have to get home. That there is no choice in we have to get home. But then what we became concerned about was their emotional state and that you do have a choice in your emotions. Well, right now you can choose to be miserable the whole time, or you could choose to try to enjoy the rest of the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, I feel like that's been helpful with my kids, that they can choose their emotion. mm-hmm. too, and that they feel empowered, because I'm not in control of their emotions, but I can make them aware that they have choices in what they're going to do with how they're feeling.
Yeah, great.
This is all very, very helpful. My husband and I, we've been trying the Love and Logic unsuccessfully, so we're rereading the book and everything. I have a hard time with the empathy part, because I'm usually mad as hell first. So am I supposed to choose my emotion? What do I do in that case?
I think that's a time when, you know, like what Kim was saying earlier, that's when we realize that we do not have to give a consequence in the moment. And we say, you know, I feel, we'll talk about this later. I'll have to think this through. And you wait till you get it. You go get it together. You're the one that needs time out. Go get it together before God, and then come back when you're ready. So, yeah, not feeling like you got to deal with it. You don't want to do it when you're angry. They win when you deal with it that way. Yeah.
I know my husband used to be just super logical with our kids, but now I find that he's doing exactly what I do, and we're responding and we're getting real emotional with them. So do you recommend, like, which book would you recommend? Like, should we read it together? Like, have you had any thoughts about that? Like, is the teaching one better, or is the parenting one sufficient? Does that have all the information? Or
The parenting one is good. It's got a lot of specific examples of how to handle specific situations. It's actually the Teaching with Love and Logic DVDs that are absolutely phenomenal. And the principles do apply. And I know that you can order them on that website. But, you know, like I've had you, Diane, look at those with me. And they're really helpful. But, yeah, I think any of it that you could read together would be worth the while.
Thank you. I have one quick example and then a question. My son, when he was two, he would just hated wearing his shoes. Hated. And it was always a battle, and I was screaming at him. He'd put them on, he'd take them off, whatever. Well, then I started reading this book, and, you know, they say, well, do you want to, you can either wear your shoes or you can carry them with you. And this was in the middle mm-hmm. of winter. It had just snowed, and he made the choice to carry them with him. And sure enough, he walked, I don't know, 10 yards, and then decided he wanted them on. That was it. That was the end. Yeah. We never had that battle ever again.
That's
so
right.
That's what I thought. This book is for real, and it works. But my question, I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, and my 8-year-old is extremely mean to my 4-year-old. It's a constant battle, constantly, you know, arguing back and forth. But it's mostly, you know, my 8-year-old just being very mean to him. And in the book, I know they say that with sibling arguing, you should just kind of ignore it unless it gets to the point that one is causing, you know, harm to the other. I'm just really struggling with that because I'm just feeling that, you know, he's so mean to him, and I just don't want him, my 4-year-old, to be scarred for life, basically. And when we are at home, I do that. I'll say, well, you know, I'm sad for you that you're making these choices. You're gonna need to, you know, go up to your room and come down when you're ready or whatever. The worst is when we're in the car, because he knows mm-hmm. we can't go anywhere. I can't put him anywhere. And I'll say, you know, I'll tell you later what your consequence is gonna be or whatever. But I don't know. I just, do you have any thoughts on what to do when a older sibling is constantly mean to a younger sibling?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd ignore it, no. Like you were saying, you obviously are having a hard time here. You need to go get it together. You're welcome to join us when you're sweet, is the word they use. They had one example in the car, fighting in the car, and the mom said, you know, you could either stop arguing or you can pay me for the time I have to listen to this. You know,
That was kind of interesting. But I would keep sending her away. And you are welcome to be with us when you can treat your brother kindly. I would love to have you with us. When you feel you're ready, come on back. And you've got to keep raising the consequences.